I will officially call this meeting of the zoning hearing board to order, and I want to make everyone aware that it has been the policy of the Derry Township to record meetings for the purpose of accurate notes and to post the recording on the township website for the public to view. This meeting is being recorded for those purposes.
All right. We would like, as a township, to note that we have posted links to the Zoom meeting and offered email submittal of questions and concerns from the public, should they not be able to attend the webinar. Receiving none, we can proceed. And last meeting, the board voted to give Sandy the ability to sign the decision for last month. We are asking for you to give her the interim chair, the ability to sign the decisions for this evening as well.
And that's due to the virus, is that correct, David?
Due to COVID-19, yes.
Okay, thank you. And how about a roll call?
All members are present.
Okay, and that'll be noted. And then the next on the agenda is the approval of the minutes, and I will ask for a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved, Lindsay Drew.
Do we have a second?
I'll second, Steve Idle.
Okay, all those in favor, say aye.
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 And I think Mike probably abstains.
Correct.
Okay. And before we introduce our new board member, I will ask us to move to old business, because I think, again, Mike will have to abstain because he was not with us then. The adoption of the decision in the case of Kakayowe. And David, can you please read the order, the terms of the decision on the last page of the decision? I think it starts with, and now this blank day of June 2020.
Yep, and now this 17th day of June 2020. First point, the applicant's request for a variance from section 225-1007.9.c is granted in part and denied in part. The relief granted by the board on June 19th, 2019 shall remain viable for one additional year, that is, until June 19th, 2021. Point two, all other terms, conditions, and limitations set forth in the decision of June 19, 2019 shall remain in full force and effect and are incorporated herein by reference. Adopted by a 4-0 vote as indicated by the vice chairwoman's signature as authorized by the zoning hearing board.
Okay, and do I have a motion?
This is Steve Seidel. I'll make a motion to approve
and Thank
adopt
you.
The decision.
And authorize the signature of the chair on behalf of the whole committee due to the virus, correct?
Yes.
And anyone want to second that other than Mike?
Dean Morgan, I'll second.
Great. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Aye. Sorry. Opposed? Same. And Mike, you'll abstain?
Correct.
Okay, just because you were not on the board. And we do want to welcome our new board member. Mike, do you want to tell us your name and a little bit about yourself?
Sure. First of all, thank you. And it's a pleasure to be with all of you. I look forward to getting to know all of you, know some of you. And had a chance to serve on the zoning board back in 2008 to 2014. And under Chuck's leadership, I really enjoyed that experience. And when I heard about the opportunity opening up, I I put my, you know, threw my name in for consideration. Really grateful to be a part of it again. Lived in Hershey for, let's see, I moved here from Indianapolis back in 2000. Prior to that, I was working at Eli Lilly and Company in human resources, operations, and marketing. Moved out here to take a position in sales management. Finished that up about 8 years ago. Simultaneously had an advertising business, which I recently sold. And for the last few years, I've just been remodeling homes and, you know, small jobs, big jobs, teardowns, new builds. And I'm up over 27 homes now in the last 3 years, and slowing down a little bit. So looking forward to being a part of this team. Thank you.
Mike, thank you so much for that excellent introduction. I really appreciate it. You have been busy, and thank you all. I think we all sent welcoming comments. Anybody else want to, any other board members, that is, want to mention, say anything in regard to adding Mike?
Welcome.
Okay, thanks. All right. And we'll all share in that welcome. The next item of business is the hearing in the case of Karen Pearson. And I do want to mention, we received some information later in the day today, additional information, and I'll have some of that read into the record just so everyone can be on the same page. But I'll turn it over to the staff at this point. Do we want to have Karen, let's see, which one is this? Karen testify?
Yeah, I think it'd be appropriate to swear Karen in.
Okay, I will be happy to do that. And Karen, if you just bear with me a second. Okay, if you could please raise your right hand.
Hey, Sandy, 1 second. Is there anyone else that's going to be testifying with Karen or on behalf of Karen?
No.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll point out for the record that we have Bill Long, Jim Gaynor, and Stephanie Jordan in attendance. In the audience, so to speak.
Okay, thank you all. Thanks for that assist, Steve. Okay, Karen, now can you please raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. You can proceed. And did Chuck did Chuck or the staff give you the requirements for the appeal and what you're to tell us about?
I believe so. I'm trying to find out, am I referencing anything to the letter that I received as far as perceived violations, or am I just discussing the change in the order?
Well, in fact, that was something we just got this afternoon. So Chuck, can you please read that letter into the evidence?
Sure.
Sandy, if I could just interject, I think because there is an appeal, it would be, in accordance with the MPC, to have Chuck or staff give testimony first about the violation.
Okay, we can have them do that after we read the letter.
Sure. But I do think it would be appropriate for Chuck to be sworn in as well.
Okay, we'll do that when we get to it. Thank you, Megan. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Chuck, you can read the letter.
I will share it on the screen if you like.
And then you can read it, yes, please.
So the letter was addressed
to— I'm sorry, Chuck, was it highlighted when you sent it?
No, it was not.
Thank you.
So this letter is to notify you of a violation of the township zoning ordinance occurring on your property relative to the operation of a bed and breakfast home. It has come to our attention that you are not running a bed and breakfast home as described in the zoning ordinance or as approved by the zoning hearing board. definition, bed and breakfast home is an owner-occupied single-family detached dwelling in which a maximum of 10 rooms, all without cooking facilities, are rented to guests, typically on a daily basis, in which breakfast may be served to the guest by the proprietor of the facility. Also, in accordance with Section 228-502.1.E, meal service shall be limited to breakfast only to overnight guests of the facility. The applicant intends to limit meal service by serving one hot breakfast during each guest stay and serving items such as muffins and toasts on the other days. And as Sandy's pointed out,
hold on, Chuck, can you just read it at this point? Should we get in the record? Thank you, sorry to interrupt.
In accordance with Section 228-502.1.G, the owner and or manager of the facility shall reside therein. The applicant intends to reside at the property once renovations are complete. The letter notes your homestead property for tax assessment purposes is on record as 938 Hillside Avenue, Elizabethtown, PA 17022. Conditions of the Zoning Hearing Board, memorandums, findings, opinion, and other order states any violation of any condition imposed therein shall be a violation of the Township Zoning Ordinance and shall be enforced as provided in the ordinance. That at large is the violation.
No, Chuck, can you just read? I haven't sworn you in yet, so you can't testify.
That's fine. You shall commence activities to correct the above violations on your property by ceasing to operate or residing at the property no later than Tuesday, February 25th, 2020, and completely cure the violation by Tuesday, March 31st, 2020. Please be advised that you have the right to appeal this notice of violation to the Derry Township Zoning Hearing Board within 30 days of the date of service of this notice if you believe that I have misinterpreted or misapplied the zoning ordinance. The application for appeal must contain all information described in Section 225.1007.1 of the Township Zoning Ordinance. Failure to comply with this notice of violation within the time specified, unless that time period is extended by appeal to the Zoning Hearing Board, will constitute a violation of the zoning ordinance. Violation of the zoning ordinance may result in the institution of civil enforcement proceedings before a district justice, where the district justice may impose a fine of not more than $500 plus all court costs, including the township's attorney's fees incurred as a result of such action. Each day that the violation continues shall constitute a separate violation and may subject you to daily fines of up to $500. The township may also institute other appropriate actions at law or in equity which may be necessary to enforce the provisions of the zoning ordinance. All sections of the zoning ordinance referenced in this letter can be accessed online at www.derrytownship.org, or you may contact me for paper copies. Please let me know if you have any questions regarding the referenced ordinance sections. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Sincerely, Charles W. Emmerich, Jr., Director of Community Development.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chuck. And now I should swear you in. So if you want to raise your right hand, is David also going to testify or anyone else?
It'll just be me.
Okay. Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Is this a letter that you were referencing to, or did you say you said you received something new today?
I just got that letter today.
Oh, this letter. This is what the one you were referencing to. I thought you meant that there was something additional on top of this. Okay.
So we can just start with the location of the property along Lingo Avenue. It is in our Palmdale mixed district. Within that district, bed and breakfast homes are permitted by special exception under 225.502.1. 225.502 cites the specific criteria for special exception uses, which I think the board's fairly familiar with, but just in general, the Township Zoning Hearing Board shall find that the use will not adversely affect the health or safety of residents in the neighborhood or district in which the use is located. The Township Zoning Hearing Board shall find that the use will not overburden existing public services, including water, sanitary sewer, public roads, storm drainage, and other public improvements. The Township Zoning Hearing Board shall find that the use will not be detrimental to the use or development of or change the essential character of the neighborhood or district in which the use is proposed. The Township Zoning Hearing Board shall consider at a minimum the impact of noise, dust, light, odor, and adequacy of parking. You shall meet all other requirements of the chapter. Room lot area shall be 1 acre when the use relies on an on-lot septic system. And then more specifically, the requirements to operate a bed and breakfast within the Palmdale mixed use is first, all lots to contain a bed and breakfast home shall be compliant with all other lot criteria of the zoning ordinance. To maintain consistency between established and proposed developments, parking on the lot shall be located between the front facade and the front lot line when use of an alley for parking is available. I'm sorry, shall not be located between the front facade and the lot line when use of an alley for parking is available. Parking shall retain a residential appearance. Not more than 10 bedrooms may be available for use for such or used for such use in a building. Not more than one ground sign shall be permitted on the lot, and it shall meet the dimensional requirements of this chapter. Each meal service shall be limited to breakfast only to overnight guests of the facility. All street parking shall be provided on the lot. The number of all street parking spaces and loading spaces shall be provided as defined by this chapter. All parking spaces and driveways shall be surfaced with bituminous brick, concrete, or stone block paving materials. The owner and or manager of the facility shall reside therein, and an overnight guest shall not occupy the facility for more than 14 nights in a 30-day period. So as we look at a bed and breakfast use, what it needs compared to, or at least the way that I believe that it's operating, is as a short-term rental. So within the definitions of the ordinance for dwelling types and for lodging facilities, I'd like to share the comparison between a bed and breakfast and a short-term rental. A bed and breakfast is owner-occupied, although we do allow a proprietor. It contains a maximum of 10 rooms. It's rented on a daily basis. It contains no cooking facilities as part of the rental. It's typically rented on a daily basis, and breakfast may be served by the proprietor. Whereas a short-term rental is a rental that rents all or part of a dwelling, includes a single cooking facility, and is limited to a 30-day stay and 2 people per bedroom. The key things there being the cooking facilities.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Chuck, is that your opinion?
No, that's what the ordinance says.
No, that the key thing is the cooking facility. Does the ordinance say the key thing is the cooking facility?
So we're in a bed and breakfast home. The rooms that are rented are all without cooking facilities. So cooking facilities are not included in the rental. Whereas...
But could you answer my question, please?
I am.
Okay, thank you.
Whereas a short-term rental includes a cooking area as part of the rental.
So
it's not opinion, it's written in the ordinance that a bed and breakfast does not include cooking facilities and a short-term rental does.
So Chuck, for a bed and breakfast, it's owner occupied. So in other words, just to keep it simple, so I own a single family home that obviously has a kitchen, and I have 4 bedrooms in that home. I'm the owner. I live there, so I occupy the home. Are you saying that is something that would qualify, because in essence you are just renting the room and you are not renting the kitchen space since it is in fact owner occupied? Is that
the typical layout of a bed and breakfast as opposed to a short-term rental? Yes. that the owner would occupy it and that the kitchen would not be included in the rental.
And so in other words, the short-term rental, the owner would not, they could or could not occupy it, or they absolutely do not occupy it. And it's more like a, you're just rent. So it could also be the owner doesn't live there, but they also have a cooking facility. Is that true?
So
the key difference is he doesn't live there.
So a short-term rental is any portion of a dwelling. It could be all the dwelling. It could be that the owner is still living there.
Okay.
That dwelling would contain a single cooking area. It could be used for a rental for a period of less than 30 consecutive days. And again, when we look at the different uses, you have to kind of look at the different definitions. So if we look at a boarding home is different than both of those. Okay, in a boarding home, a portion of the building is rented for lodging rooms, okay? But there is a common kitchen area for the preparation of meals.
Okay. Okay.
So Chuck, I have a question. I didn't see any mention in the notice of violation letter about the use of the kitchen facility. It seems that that's part of the distinction you're making here. And so what is the, is there a violation in your opinion in regard to the use of the cooking facilities, or is there more than one cooking facility in this home?
So in the violation letter, we note that the bed and breakfast home is not to include rental of the cooking facilities.
Right. What I'm asking you is there an indication? What generated the violation letter to start with? What triggered that? And are you saying that the use of the cooking facilities by the renters is one of the things that you're flagging as a violation? I'm not seeing that in the letter, so I'm trying to understand that.
So the catalyst for the letter was that we monitor Airbnb and other websites for illegal short-term rentals. We do that on a rather regular basis. And in reviewing Karen Pearson's property, which is listed on Airbnb, as we looked into the ad, we found that the ad did not portray it as a bed and breakfast. It portrayed it as a short-term rental. And we can go on to the ad.
So wait, hold on. I don't know that we got the ad in our original packet, did we?
This is my testimony.
Interesting. Well, can we make sure that the violation letter that gets put into the official record doesn't have that highlighting in it? Do you have that, Megan? It did not have the highlighting in it.
Yes, my letter doesn't have the highlighting.
Okay, just so we make sure that goes in the official record in case there's any further actions.
Sure. And for a bed and breakfast not to have cooking facilities is certainly not uncommon. As you can see from the borough of, Emanus, borough of Hatfield, the borough of Hamburg, the township of Cumberland, all talk about only renting sleeping facilities. The borough of Barnett, New Jersey, also notes that individual kitchen facilities or kitchenettes in the guest room shall be prohibited.
And just so I'm clear, again, I'm getting a little confused with what we got and what we didn't get. This is just, did you share this information with the property owner before or with us? This is just something you want to get in the record tonight?
Yes.
So Karen and the rest of us never saw this before.
That's correct.
Thank you.
So, you know, throughout many parts of the state and into other states, bed and breakfasts are typically not including cooking facilities, just overnight lodging facilities. So the ads, and this was printed off February 24th, notes that you're renting the entire home, you'll have the entire house to yourself, full access to the entire home, make all your meals in the fully equipped kitchen, just off the formal dining room. Some of the renters in their reviews note that in this case, the only suggestion is that if you like to cook, bring your few pots and pans. Today I went on the websites, and Airbnb notes still the entire house is for rent. It notes you have access to all common areas of the home, family room, four bedrooms, dining room, movie theater, and patio. It does note in the amenities that the kitchen's not included, but it's also crossed out. Some guests in their reviews noted that there was nobody there at the home to meet them when they checked in. HomeAway is another website that lists rentals, and this property is on HomeAway. And it notes that it has home has a full kitchen with everything you need to be able to cook meals and enjoy time away from your family. Expedia also lists rentals, and in Expedia it notes that it has a full kitchen and that you have the entire home to share with your guests. And, you know, the only person that you'll be sharing it with are your guests. So as we go back to the prior decision, there was testimony on the record that Karen will live at the property with her 8-year-old son once the renovations are complete, and also that guests will not stay more than 14 consecutive nights. When asked about noise, outdoor noise, she argued that she will be living at the property with the young son, so she will be able to control the noise. We noted the conditions in the decision, as we typically do, that the owner or manager of the facility shall reside therein, and the testimony was that the applicant intends to reside at the property once the renovations are complete. And also, an overnight guest shall not occupy the facility for more than 14 consecutive nights in a 30-day period, and she notes that she will not allow that. And so that was her representation at the time. The really key important part in this case is the rental of the kitchen. This home has been rented or operated as a short-term rental, not as a bed and breakfast. And if indeed it's operated as a short-term rental, that's not a permitted use in this zoning district. So purely the fact that there's cooking facilities as part of the rental takes it out of the definition, out of the requirements for a bed and breakfast home, and makes it a short-term rental. I think that concludes what I have to say at this time.
Chuck, if Ms. Pearson lived there, then this would be a different story, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
And thank you, Mike, for that question. Are there any other questions for Chuck from the board?
Mike, Chuck, regardless of occupancy of the owner, under the bed and breakfast home category, the access to cooking facilities is really the issue at hand, correct? Because even if they were, even if she was residing on the property, if the rental includes access to the cooking facilities, then it does not meet the classification of a bed and breakfast.
That's correct. And at that point, it becomes a different use.
Thank you, Lindsay. Other question from board members? And we may go back to Chuck, I think, in the future, unless the solicitor disagrees. And otherwise, I would turn back to Karen. I believe you've, Ms. Pearson, you've been sworn in.
I have.
And if you want to go over what you'd like to share with us, sure. We did get some information.
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to address the kitchen part before I address the owner manager. As far as the kitchen goes, I've looked through every ordinance and it states that none of the rented rooms are allowed to have a kitchen facility. Bed and breakfast states that it can have only one full kitchen on site, which we have one full kitchen on site. The rooms that are rented do not have their own personal cooking facility, but any single family residence will have a kitchen. So, I mean, having the kitchen is not necessarily where the issue is. From what I'm understanding, it's allowing them use of the kitchen, okay? So when looking through the ordinance and looking through everything when it came to the kitchen, the only thing that I found was that it said a bed and breakfast, should be limited to 10 rooms for rent, all without cooking facilities. All of the sleeping rooms do not have cooking facilities. A typical bed and breakfast, which I have examples of in Derry Township that I contacted, and I have references, all of which said that the guests that stay in the rooms all have access to all the common areas of the home as well. So when they're not in their rooms, they can all come downstairs. There's a living room. There's always a TV room. Sometimes they have a parlor room, a game room. And then they usually will have a dining area where the guests will come down when food is prepared for them, as do we. So they have access to the arcade, to the movie theater that's within the bed and breakfast. They have access to the living room. They have access to all areas of the house. As far as Airbnb stating that the entire house is for rent, it's because Airbnb offers you three options. It's either entire house, which because a bed and breakfast has all the common areas, you do have access to the entire house. Or they'll say a single room or a shared room. So those are my options. So if I put single room, where I testified in the original hearing that I intended to rent to families as opposed to multiple different families in each room. My vision of it was that it would be a family that would come, and rather than renting several different hotel rooms in a hotel, they could come to my home and instead each of the kids would have their own rooms. So the rental itself is for the bedrooms. They just have access to all common areas, which is very standard in all bed and breakfast. The inn at Westwood Farm, which is in the Hershey area, I contacted them. I spoke with a woman named Caroline. She explained to me that that the guests are allowed to use the refrigerator, the grill, the microwave, toaster oven, coffee pot. That's all located in the common areas. That's at no additional charge. It's a common area space that is open to any guests within the bed and breakfast. 1825 Inn, same thing. Common areas include our dining room where you can treat yourself to free snacks and refreshments. This is on their website. Cool drinks in the refrigerator, use of the microwave, enjoy a hot cup of coffee, tea, hot chocolate while watching TV. So then I contacted them directly and said the same thing. Do you guys have a grill that would be available for use? And they said the same thing. We do have a grill outside. If the guests choose to use it, they can use it. And I said, well, where can I store my food? And they said, there is a refrigerator in the common area that is available for any of the guests to use. So, I mean, that's just two examples, but excuse me. I did contact five different bed and breakfasts, and every single one of them are either in Derry Township or surrounding Derry Township, and every single one of them offer the same thing. The only difference that I found between mine and theirs was that the stove and the oven was not offered for an available guest use unless you requested from the owner, in which case they said they would do everything they can to accommodate you. So, I mean, I gather from that that no, it's not just there for everybody to go and cook their meals, but if there was something that you wanted to prepare, there is a kitchen on the facility that, you know, that you are available to use. So that was not what was given to me by every one of them, but that was information that was given to me by two of them, that they would accommodate the guest if they wanted to cook something. So while it's not necessarily their common area, the kitchen where they actually have the stove and the oven, all the other areas are common areas that offer the other options of cooking their food, microwaves, toaster ovens, coffee pots, as well as a grill outside. So all of those are amenities that they all have that they've had, you know, forever. However, so because of that, and to kind of not only be in compliance with what is perceived in your ordinance by Mr. Emmerich, and to be on par with what the other bed and breakfasts are doing in the area, that is when I went into the Airbnb listing and removed the kitchen as an amenity for the guest and removed the stove and the oven as an allowable use. So we have in our guest book and we have on there that they're allowed to use just those items, the microwave, toaster oven, coffee pot, and the grill. And the grill was actually specifically mentioned in my original order and findings that I mentioned that I had a grill that would be a grill in a picnic area that was for the guest use. So with that being said, allowing them to use the stove and the oven was not a blatant violation. It was what I perceived as an allowable thing because they didn't have cooking facilities in their bedrooms. And since the grill was mentioned as an allowable amenity for my guests, I was just under the impression that if they could use that cooking tool, I didn't see an issue with them using any other cooking tools. When it was brought to my attention, that was when we amended it and took out the stove and the oven in order to be, you know, kind of on par with the other bed and breakfasts that are in the area that have approval from Derry Township. So I did that, I guess, I don't want to say as a, like, I guess a gesture, if you will, but just to show that, you know, we want to be in compliance with everything. We're not trying to skirt around and to, you know, eliminate that violation. So instead of, you know, arguing it and saying, well, I think that they should be able to use it because I don't see specific wording saying that guests are prohibited from using the kitchen. It just says that they can't have cooking facilities in their rooms. But it does state that there can be one full kitchen on property. It does not specify that that one full kitchen is off limit to any of the guests' use. So, like I said, it was done in good faith. It was not something that I was, you know, trying to be, you know, off putting it. So I put in here in my findings for the kitchen. And I also kind of want to point out that, you know, the grill that was listed in my original approval was listed there. But then when I was emailing back and forth with the office, one of the things that was mentioned, because I said, well, specifically, what are the violations that I have to discuss? And a picture of the amenities that I had was sent to me and highlighted. And the word grill, that I offered a grill, was circled. So I kind of argued back and I said, well, it's circled by you. So you're saying, you know, that the grill is not an allowable feature that's listed on my listing for our bed and breakfast. So you're saying that the grill is not an allowable feature, but in the order, it states that it is an allowable feature. So, I mean, at the very best, I think that we can, I mean, at least see that there's some sort of, you know, interpretation differences or some, you know, ambiguous wording that, you know, the board found that the grill was fine, but one member had sent me a letter stating that that was considered a violation. So, I mean, even different members within the board saw that as a different allowable use or not. So, I think, you know, it's feasible to see that I would see that as an allowable thing as well. All right, so. The ordinance states that bed and breakfast should be limited to all that. So, and another thing, we don't rent the kitchen. So another one of the emails that came back, it just said, you know, renting the kitchen is just simply not an allowable use in a bed and breakfast. But I argue that we don't rent the kitchen. We rent the rooms and you have access to the common areas of the house, and the kitchen was just a common area of the house. So I've put those restrictions on. So that should not be an issue moving forward. However, they do have the right to store their food in the refrigerator, reheat their pizzas in the microwave if they should order something, and use the coffee maker and the microwave just as all the other bed and breakfasts in the area are able to do. So I put in here, I said, as guests in our home, we offer the kitchen to store their food. Furthermore, the allowed use of the grill and picnic area would argue that the use of any tool to provide the family with a hot meal is not prohibited. And then I gave the examples. So as far as the kitchen goes, that's all I really have to say about that. I removed the stove and the oven and updated the listing. The reason I didn't update the Expedia and the HomeAway and the other ones is, quite honestly, we've never had any bookings through them because I didn't complete the entire listing. We just were getting so much activity through the one website plus our personal website that I honestly forgot they were there. I've never had one list or one reservation at all come through any of those avenues. So it honestly just kind of slipped my mind to even go back through all the other ones because they've never had any rentals through them. So that's on the kitchen.
Can I ask a question about that before you move on?
Please.
So you book on just Airbnb and through the website for the business?
It's just mostly Google searches. If somebody Google searches, a bed and breakfast in the area, and we get phone calls. So it's repeat stays. Plus that, we've just had a very consistent group of people that were coming back. We had some construction workers that were working at the Hershey Hospital since last August, that have rented the house every single week since August. They would stay Monday through Thursday every single week. So because they were renting it, we had it blocked off so much that we really weren't getting any activity through other websites because we had this constant rental for each week, which I believe at that point was why it was brought up and highlighted in there about the 14 consecutive days. And Chuck and I, Mr. Emmerich and I had discussed it, and I explained that they'd never stayed 14 consecutive days in a 30-day period. It was always 12 days during each month, and it was broken up by 4 days in between each stay. So that was not a violation.
Okay. I was questioning about the website just because I did link to that since we're on this virtual, and just wanted to note that you do reference a fully equipped kitchen on your website, thesemisweetlife.com.
We have other properties that one is leading to. So the other properties that we have are not within Derry Township, and those are not listed as bed and breakfast. Those ones are in different vacation areas. So I mean, I updated just where, like I said, where we get reservations from. I don't even believe that there's an option to book on that website. That was something that we had started early on and then never went back and updated or advertised it. So really the only place that we get our reservations from are the Airbnb currently, plus repeat stays, and then the construction workers.
Okay, I linked to it from your Facebook page. So I'm more or less just calling it to your attention.
I have a question for you, Karen. Mm-hmm. So how would I, as a prospective guest, how would I rent a single one of the bedrooms?
We don't do that. So in the original testimony that I gave when I came in, I said, and it's in our order and findings, that my intent was to always rent to families, that we wanted to give that more personal feel. So we were not going to rent individual rooms to individual people, mainly because they don't have their own personal bathrooms. So because they don't have their own personal bathrooms and people would have to leave their room to go to use the bathroom to shower, it just made more sense to market it more towards families. So it would be the same rental rate, but for that rental rate, you get all four bedrooms.
Karen or whoever, the issue that I'm still struggling with is the whole reason that we're here, and that is the cross-referencing your where you currently live at Hillside Avenue. in Elizabethtown. And your testimony back in May 15th of 2019, where you stated that you will be living at the property with your son, be able to control the noise, et cetera. I mean, as part of the definition of a bed and breakfast is that you will live at the dwelling that's in the code. And I think that's the reason we're here. It seems like we're semantically getting, you know, up, things are up for interpretation over use of the grill or the refrigerator or the stove. But if you get down to the heart of the issue, it seems to me that in order to be categorized as a bed and breakfast, you have to live there. And that's sure. The testimony.
I have my testimony in a two-part because I'm addressing each of the issues that Mr. Emick brought up individually so that we could go through one and not kind of go back and forth. So I wanted to kind of cover
that's
one.
That's fine. If we can maybe just get to that because the other.
Yeah, absolutely. If nobody has any more.
Less concerned about the stove and the grill, but really about that, the core definition, because it's only a couple of sentences. It says an owner-occupied single-family dwelling. You said I will be living, you testified you would be living there, and now you're not. So that's the issue that I'm struggling with.
Okay, I can go ahead and address that. If nobody has any more questions on the kitchen facilities of it, I can go ahead and address that part.
Actually, Ms. Pearson, I do have a question.
Okay.
With respect to the kitchen, and you've blocked off certain things, the stove, etc., what have you done actually physically to stop somebody from using the stove?
We have a manager that lives within the house, and it's in our rule book. Okay. So, I mean, obviously we still have to have a functional kitchen because we still have a manager that manages the property that provides the breakfast should they want to. Plus that's her personal residence. So she still needs to have access to the kitchen. So it is in the rule book, but I can't really shut off the gas or block off.
So you do have a manager who lives
yes.
there now.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. And I'll let you get to that then. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I do want to follow up on your question, Dean. So the kitchen, you're saying the kitchen is not physically separated from the rest of the living areas? Where's the kitchen in relation to your manager's living quarters and also in relation to the rest of the facilities that your guests would be renting?
Sure. Well, I mean, most bed and breakfasts are usually a single family home kind of turned into a bed and breakfast. So the kitchen is pretty much dead center. So right off the kitchen is a set of stairs that takes you downstairs to the lower level, which is where the manager stays. So it's 15 stairs from her room.
And Karen, that's that address of your manager, that's the on their driver's license. It's listed on their where their residence is.
Yes, at 113 North Lingle. She has already filled out the paperwork and sent it in.
So prior to, when did she fill the paperwork out?
I'm not aware. I did not make that a requirement.
In the last month?
I believe within the last 4 months. So it was brought to her attention.
Prior to the violation. So once you were notified of the violation, that's when she took residence?
No, she had already taken residence prior to the violation. I just never questioned whether or not she had changed her mailing address or had she, you know, taken those precautions. However, I will say that when that was brought to my attention and I explained to Mr. Emmerich that I did have a live-in manager, and he said, well, you know, the reviews don't reflect that, which I think if we log into the Airbnb site right now and if you looked at it and looked at the reviews, you will actually see where it references the manager on site, as well as myself, as well as John, several times in reference to us hosting them and things that we've done with them. So as far as her changing her address, I did not make that a requirement, but I did send Mr. Emmerich a copy of our agreement with her as far as like what she's being paid, what her responsibilities are. So there is an employee agreement and the rules and the expectations of her. And I also sent him I believe two different copies of two different paycheck stubs that reference that house as her home address.
But let me ask you this, and you, I mean, I guess you've been sworn in, so she sleeps there.
Yes.
She doesn't sleep at another residence. Are you saying at any time that I would go there on a random Tuesday. She sleeps at that address and only that, it is her residence.
Yes, in my agreement with her, it states that she is supposed to sleep there on the nights that we have any guests, and she is not to stay away from that residence for more than two consecutive nights, unless it's brought to our attention so that we can make sure somebody is there in her stead. Mr. Emmerich, do you have a copy of that from the email that I had sent you with a copy of her requirements as a manager?
We do have it in the application packet.
Okay. Okay, so here's where that kind of came into play. And it's listed as a violation because it's stating that I had testified at the hearing that I was going to live there. So what ended up happening was I had moved into the Lingle Avenue house in June of 2019, once all the renovations were done and prior to anybody renting the property. I did move in there. Excuse me. And then what ended up happening was my husband and I, excuse me, when we got married, we had gotten married, and then, so he wasn't my husband at the time. So my husband and I had gotten married, and there is a provision in his custody agreement for his kids that he's not allowed to move out of the township or the school district where his kids live. Otherwise, it would cause an issue with the custody. So we tried going back and forth to see if he could move, but allow the kids to remain in the same school district. So we were going back and forth with that. So I started looking over the provisions of the order as well as the zoning ordinance and saw nothing that stated that I had to be at the Lingle Avenue house personally. In fact, it read as it would to, if, in fact, it read that it would allow a manager to run the property in my stead. The wording indicated that this was not a special exemption or a variance request, but an allowable provision within the bed and breakfast. It says owner and or manager. In the order sent to me, it states that the owner and or manager shall live on the property. So under your glossary of terms, the words shall or must are to mean mandatory, right? So it says the owner and or manager, you know, shall live on the property. So somebody must live there. However, the next line indicates that the applicant intends to live at the property. Because it did not state that I had to live there, that it had to be me, I was under the impression that, or on the assumption that I was still following within the guidelines, that it was an owner and or manager. And it was just that my intent was to live there, which I did for 6 months. Before I left. My husband had a major accident at the property, and he cut off half of his foot with the lawnmower at the house. So, I mean, he's not working. He's getting fit for prosthetics. He's still
in. Can I just interrupt you for one moment? Chuck, could you just comment on this slide? This would still be a violation before we make her have to go through this, providing all of this testimony on personal family matters. Why this is before this board, if the the ruling from our last time that we saw her last year and the ordinance state that the owner and or manager of the facility shall reside therein. You're on mute, Chuck.
I said thank you. As you're aware, all of our orders talk about the representation at the hearing. So Mrs. Pearson's did represent that she was going to live there, her and her son. That's how they were going to take care of the noise. How the bed and breakfast was going to operate. So to bring in a manager and not reside there is is different than what was testified to. I think the board may have attached different conditions for the use had it understood that it would be a manager at the property and not the owner.
On what basis do you make that assumption?
That the board was told that the Pearsons would live there.
Because now just my recollection, and we don't have the exact, transcript of this, was that we were having the conversation because Ms. Pearson had was getting married, had bought a house, was starting a business. Like, there were a bunch of different things going on at that time. And I remember there being the conversation about whether or not she was going to be able to move on to this property. And someone asked if that was truly realistic. And that is where that played into the conversation. But regardless of whether or not she's there, the ordinance states that a manager or the owner have to live there, correct? So it was not a condition of the use that the owner, specifically by name Karen Pearson, live on that property. It's that she comply with the ordinance.
That's correct. And as part of this appeal, what I had told Karen was that that we would validate a manager on the property, assuming that the relief was granted.
That what relief was granted?
Well, she's appealing my determination that she's operating a short-term rental, in essence. Along with that, by the way, I found out about the manager living on the property after the violation notice was sent, if that's at all helpful. But in light of that, I felt it right that if she was going to appeal my notice of violation based on the kitchen, that the board would address the manager, the resident manager as well.
Is it standard practice for a bed and breakfast under the ordinance operating to have to notify the township if the owner or manager change and the resident who is managing the property and complying with the ordinance changes? Is that standard operating practice?
So this is the only bed and breakfast that's going through the special exception use in Derry Township.
Okay, thank you for your question, Lindsay. I actually had the exact same question, that the order in the terms of the order says the owner and or manager of the facility shall reside therein. That's directly from our order. And the testimony, and again, I was on the zoning hearing board at the time, was fairly clear that she intended at the time to stay at the property with her 8-year-old son. Of course, everyone knows that's not going to always stay the same because, for example, the 8-year-old child becomes a 9-year-old child, a 10-year-old child. And according to the specific way our order was written, my opinion as a member of this board is that, and a member of the deliberating board of that time, was that we did not specifically include that as a requirement. And we could have if we wanted to, but if you look at the last page where the order clearly states what we required, we chose not to make it a condition. That's my recollection. And that's the way the order was issued. So Chuck and I are having a difference of opinion, I believe.
I would agree with you on that, Sandy. And I am one of the other members of the board who heard this and made the ruling. We're actually the only two that currently are still on the board. But I do not, it was never my interpretation that we were, we would consider it violation of the ordinance or the special exception if it were a manager and not Ms. Pearson herself.
Any other?
Actually, I have a question for Chuck.
You're not finished. Of course, you may proceed.
Myself or Mr. Morgan for the question?
Oh, no. Anyone, if anyone has a question, a board member or Ms. Pearson, if Ms. Pearson, if you have additional testimony, feel free to continue. If a board member has a question of Ms. Pearson or Mr. Emmerich, you may ask them the question. I'm just saying the board members only.
Ms. Pearson, do you have any further testimony you want to provide?
I mean, the only other testimony that I would have had was requesting a modification of the order due to change of circumstances, but I think I'm gathering here that we're not necessarily sure that that's a requirement.
Okay. Well, with respect to that modification, you want to be able to have a manager there. Is that the modification you're seeking?
Yes.
Okay.
But I also want to make sure that, should that manager change at any time, I need to know whether or not that is something that has to be in front of the board every single time if there's a change of employment or
okay,
how that would work.
Okay.
I would like to say, just in reference to that, being that I'm not on the property anymore, I did take procedural, we put cameras on the property so that the perimeter of the property is on camera, facing the front door and facing the fire pit area where people would, hang out outside where there would be an issue with noise. So we did do that in order to take that extra precaution so that I can always watch the house remotely. So even though I'm not physically there and we have somebody there that is managing it, I am able to watch it, see it at any time live, remotely from my phone at any time. So that was a procedure that we had taken, just in order to have that extra precaution there to make sure that, everything was being followed.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead, Dean. Did you have a question?
I have a question for Chuck. Chuck, based upon the information that's been provided here, would you agree that if you had known the manager was present prior to the violation date, that would not be a violation?
Typically, when I write a violation, I try and include any inkling of a violation in the notice. I still stand by an understanding two board members that were in the hearing disagree, but the order clearly states that the applicant may establish the bed and breakfast at the subject property as represented during the hearing in this matter, and during the hearing in the matter, the applicant was going to reside there.
Okay.
Can I say something on that real quick? Is that okay?
Ms. Pearson, hold on just a second. So Chuck, would you then say that in situations like this, that she would then have to come back to the board if she were to leave and get a manager, or each and every time that a new manager is appointed?
I think appointment of a new manager would not be a violation, because if it was testified to that there'd be a manager operating the bed and breakfast, I don't know that that person needs named. It's just, it's a function of how it operates. I would think that many of the bed and breakfasts that Karen mentioned are truly owner occupied, and they truly rent individual bedrooms. My concern here is that aside from the non-owner occupied, that it's a whole house rental, which makes it a short-term rental.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. I have no other questions.
Okay. May I address those points brought up? The mention of the short-term rental keeps coming up, saying because it's a whole house. But in my testimony and in the findings, opinion, and orders, it does state, I'm going to find it, because it does say Ms. Pearson intends to rent the... I want to find it because it's kind of important, because it does state that she... It states in here that I intend to market it towards whole families to stay in the house and not towards individual guests in the room. So it is mentioned, it was mentioned during the hearing, and it was also noted in the findings.
Okay. And that's a part of the order then, Ms. Pearson?
Yes.
Okay. Then it's part of the record. We would be able to reference that.
Okay. And as far as the other bed and breakfast, Ray said, I would argue that the other ones are rented this way. Actually, only three of the other five bed and breakfasts that I contacted had the actual owner living on the property permanently. Two of them had an innkeeper, and one had a rotating of employees that would stay in the manager's quarters overnight, where they would sleep there. And then the owner actually just came in the morning and kind of did the day-to-day operations. But only three of the five had actual owners where that was their permanent residence. So I did ask all these questions because I wanted to know. I wanted to make sure that when I came here that I was not, you know, going way off of what is outside of the norm within Derry Township and the other bed and breakfasts that are ran here.
Thank you, Ms. Pearson. So board members, do you have other questions? Are there other people in the audience who would like to comment on the or testify on this hearing?
And if so, if you can raise your hand.
Okay.
Oh, hang on. I have a panelist raising their hand.
Hey, Chuck, it's Brian Link.
Yes.
Hey, what is the violation in light of?
I'm sorry. Before you speak, you have to be sworn in.
Even as a member of the public?
Right, that's part of it. Yes.
All right.
Sorry, not my rules. I just.
I'm ready.
Okay, so state your name, and I think the court reporter needs your address as well. Is that correct, court reporter?
Yes, please.
Brian Link, 230 West Ariba. Chuck.
And wait, I'm sorry to swear you in.
Yeah, sorry, Sandy.
Thank you, Brian. I apologize again for my rudeness. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yeah, I do. Yes.
And he raised his right hand.
Yeah, I did. All right.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chuck, in light of the testimony with the manager on site and the cooking stuff sort of governed, what is the violation for this?
The violation is operating it as a short-term rental as opposed to a bed and breakfast.
But what specifically in the bed and breakfast part of the ordinance?
The rental of the entire house, including the kitchen.
Okay, so that's, because earlier I thought it was like the food stuff, but it's, so you're saying now it's the room specifically needs to be rented singular.
Actually, I don't know that this is appropriate for the question. I apologize, Brian. I just don't think this is an appropriate question as okay. It goes to the deliberation process of the board.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Great.
Okay, I do have Bill Long that has his hand up, so.
Bill, if you want to unmute, you have to say your name and your address for the court reporter to record.
Hi, actually, this is Sandy Long. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We live at 1807 Lehman Street in Hershey. We're we abut this property. Our property is right up against it.
Okay. And
we think...
No, hold on. I'm sorry to interrupt. Sorry. Again, apologize for my rudeness.
Sorry.
My remote rudeness, indeed. But first, raise your right hand.
I am.
And do you swear to testify or affirm... Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you very much, Sandy.
So
you may proceed.
We think that the issue is that not only has it never been owner occupied, we have no evidence that there's anybody, a manager of any kind living there, or I wouldn't be hurting the dogs of the guests away from busy Lingle Avenue. I wouldn't have had to go over there last weekend and ask the guests to turn their music down. If there's a manager there, she's a ghost.
Okay. Do you have any other testimony, Sandy?
Only that last year when Karen introduced herself to me, she told me that they had no intention of living there, that they didn't need to live there because it was an Airbnb. And I regret that she deceived me.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, Sandy.
Thank you.
Anyone else looking to testify that we can tell?
Sandy, if I could ask Ms. Long a couple questions, please.
Sure.
Ms. Long, do you have any specific specific circumstances that you can cite, maybe some dates that you went to the house and no one was, our manager wasn't present, things of that nature?
I went to the house this last weekend, went right over, had to ask them to turn the music down. There was no manager there. There were a few times that the construction workers, and they were not good neighbors. None of you would have wanted them for neighbors. Karen, you wouldn't have wanted them for neighbors. They were bad neighbors. I went over several times to knock on the door. No answer. Nobody was.
I'm asking for specific times. So you're saying last weekend there was loud music. You spoke, yes, but there
all
were.
All through quarantine, there were lots of parties with the construction workers.
With the workers, but were there any particular times where you interacted with guests?
When I what?
When you interacted with guests of the facility.
Just to tell them to keep their dogs off of Lingle Avenue, but I can't give you the dates.
Okay. And this last.
The construction workers were the guests, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. That clarifies it for me. Thank you.
As far as this past weekend, I'm aware of this. I pulled up maybe 10 minutes after or 15 minutes after Ms. Long had gone over there and spoken with them because I was there. They were all sitting around the table near the sunroom, and they had their two young children that were sleeping on their laps. They had a radio that was next to the garage area that they had outside. And when I arrived, I pulled up maybe around 9:30, 9:45. I can actually probably look and tell you exactly because it's actually within the last 30 days, quite frankly. I could probably pull up the video and you'll actually see me there with the guests. So I did pull up. I was the one that was there that night. When I pulled up, they were sitting around the table. There was three gentlemen, two young ladies, and they had two young children. And it was before 10 p.m. They did have music on outside, which they're allowed to do. But obviously, at that point, I was out running errands. I was not there. So when I came, she did tell me, she said, well, the lady from next door came over and shook her finger at us and told us to turn the music down. And I said, well, how loud is the music? She said, I didn't think it was that loud. We had our young kids out here. And I said, all right, well, we have to make sure that we keep it down then so we don't disturb them. So that's that. As far as Ms. Long, if this is who I'm thinking of, I'm believing that it is the house that's directly behind us, separated by the fence. I know who you are when I see everybody. We know who everybody is. So I'm just clarifying that that's who we're referencing to. When we spoke early on about it, and we were talking about the people that had lived in the house before. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, do you think that this is going to be an issue? I mean, it's kind of far away. We're going to put the fence up. And they were like, no, the people that used to live there before used to throw parties all the time. We used to come and hang out with them. So that's not going to bother. It's not that big of a deal as long as they don't, you know, have, you know, loud music throughout all hours of the night. And like I said, we have cameras and I can pull up any of the dates that she brings up and I can easily show that you'll either see myself there or Vicky there, who manages this property. And it's got voice recording on it. So we would be able to hear whether or not the music was that loud or the interaction between the neighbors, if ever. And this was the first time because, see, I see you every single time I pull up and never
The last people I saw coming in tried to get into the door, couldn't figure out what to do, made a phone call, and then got in the door. So
a lot of times, because again, everybody knows that when you are at a house, you're not there 24 hours a day. People have to go to, you know, the grocery store, they go places, they leave, they visit family. So if a guest arrives earlier than what is intended, which is another reason why we do it for families.
Karen, can you just slow down a little bit?
Sorry.
That's the court reporter, yeah.
Sure. Okay. Oh, sorry. One of the reasons that we choose to rent it to a family as opposed to multiple different people in the rooms is for that reason. We don't have a receptionist there. We don't have somebody that is there 24 hours a day, which I don't believe is a requirement. They just have to be there and sleep there and reside there so that somebody is there to limit the noise at night. But I believe that all of the neighbors have my phone number. I've spoken with all of them. And if there was ever an issue, I'm easily available. And I, like I said, Sandy and Bill, I've pulled up multiple times and chatted with them and borrowed their lawnmower at times. And it's always been very friendly. So there's never once been anything brought to me telling me that there was any issues with guests, because if there was, then I would have addressed it. So this is the first time I'm hearing of it. And quite honestly, the first time that I knew that there was any issue at all.
Okay. Well, and I we have another hearing yet to do tonight. So unless the board members have any other comments, do you have any other comments?
Sandy, I just have a follow-up question because I'm still a little bit unclear on. So when did you begin to advertise and take on guests? What was the first date upon which you took on guests?
June 6th of 2019. Yeah, I believe that was when the approval came in and our first guest for the weekend after.
Okay, and were you residing there at that time?
At that time I was there, and then I moved out. And so, okay, I own a home I own a home in Elizabethtown as well that I co-own with my mom. So if there were not guests there, I would come to this house because this was where my mom and family.
Let me finish with my question. So you lived there as of June 6th, 2019 as your residence, and you then ceased living there as your residence on what date?
I moved in actually in April because we were doing the renovations. And then afterwards I left there permanently in late November. I didn't stay there unless I had guests there. I would come to the Elizabethtown house. And then we had a manager that we have there as well that would be there in my stead on the nights that I couldn't be there because I had a family here.
What was your official residence during that time?
I never changed my driver's license to that address because I have a property in Elizabethtown as well where my husband and kids were, and I was staying at that property when we had guests.
So you never actually resided at the property?
No, I did. And then when we got married.
The definition of resided is that is your residence. People have two homes, three homes, et cetera. Some people do, and that's perfectly acceptable. But what was your official residence? Was your official residence that property at any point?
Yes, I did move into that point. I did change, I did put in a request for a change of address. I did receive mail there. That was my official residence in April of 2019.
Until when?
Until November of 2019, when I permanently moved back here and put a manager in. However, I did have a manager that would stay there on the nights that I could not. So if I was to go on vacation or leave and there had to be somebody there, I would have somebody that would stay there in my place so that the house still had somebody.
Okay, so.
Could I just ask one quick question? Just for the purposes, for stating it for the record, what date did you say that you first took rentals or reservations for a guest to stay on the property?
I believe that our first reservation was end of June of 2019, if I recall correctly. I believe that the first inquiry that we had received was for June 6th, but our first actual guest that stayed there, I want to say that it was the last weekend in June of 2019. I could go back in through the calendar and give you the exact date, but
that's okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood what you had responded with before.
Okay. Do any other board members have any other questions on this request? Any other questions? Okay. Hearing none, let me just minimize this screen. I want to let you know that we have 45 days to render a decision, and then you have 30 days to appeal if you choose to do so. And with that, we will now move to our next hearing in the case of Melissa Madison, who I think has been with us this whole time. And in this case, Chuck, do you want to make preliminary comments or speak after Ms. Madison does?
Sandy, excuse me, if I could just put on the record that our firm has worked with Ms. Madison in her professional capacity, but that would not pose a conflict of interest with respect to this zoning hearing.
Okay, thank you, Solicitor. We appreciate that candor. And then again, I will ask Chuck, do you want to make any preliminary comments or should we swear in Ms. Madison?
Actually, Sandy, before we do that, we do need to have a vote so that we can allow Megan to participate in this. Since she's brought up something, we do need to have a formal acknowledgement that she can be impartial.
Well, okay, we can do that if you want. I look forward to your motion.
Okay, I would move to allow our solicitor to continue to perform her duties in light of the fact that she has advised us of a potential conflict, which she's advised us would not interfere with her ability to perform her duties appropriately.
Thank you, Dean. And is there a second for that motion?
I second that motion.
Lucy and first. All in favor, say aye.
Sandy, hold on. I have a question, Sandy.
Okay, thank you, Steve.
Shouldn't we have some discussion if we—
Yes, you may have discussion. I'm apologizing.
Yeah, Megan, could you just clarify, please? So when you say that, is it your firm, so others in your firm that have worked with Ms. Madison, or is it you individually as an attorney?
We have represented her bank that she works for, and she has referred real estate financing cases to us. And I handle the real estate mostly for the firm.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know all your duties and responsibilities, so pardon my ignorance on that. So.
Whatever the bosses would like me to do. But no, she works for a bank and she has customers who need residential and commercial loans, and we have those customers close their loans.
Okay. Thank you.
And Megan, just so that we're clarifying here, that relationship with her would not interfere with your ability to do your responsibilities as a solicitor for this board. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on the motion that has been seconded? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
And any opposed, say likewise. Any abstentions? All right, then we will pass that motion as presented by Dean. And now I will, I believe, swear in Ms. Madison, unless there's something else.
So Sandy, I think that Brian may also be assisting Melissa, is that correct?
Yes, he is.
Okay, so we'll be swearing in both of you. Brian, can you unmute?
I swore in the last hearing. Do I swear again? Here.
I don't know. You might as well.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and do it.
Okay. Sorry, guys, but you know, better safe than sorry with these legal things. So, if you could
both, think that would be appropriate.
And if you both could raise your right hand, do you swear to tell the testimony? Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
I do.
Thank you very much. And I will turn it over to, I believe, Melissa, if you'd like to speak first.
Thank you, Sandy. Yeah, basically, I'm just looking to build a 24x24 detached garage at my residence. I'm on the corner of Valley and Arriba. And apparently, unbeknownst to me, there's two setbacks, one for Valley and for Arriba. And apparently the structure I'm looking to build requires a 4-foot exception to that zoning policy. So that's why I'm here.
And yeah, so go ahead.
I'll just clear, and I think it's in the application, but the setbacks were front yard for both Valley and Ariba. And because the detached garage was classified as an accessory structure, and Chuck, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it's a 50-foot offset. And I think that left her only 20 feet of buildable space. So that's where she's at. She has the, as you can probably see in the application, she has it as far away from Valley as possible.
And Chuck, do you mind pulling that up on the screen so we can see that drawing with the red ink, please? And then if you zoom in a little, okay. So again, thank you, Chuck. We did get a copy in our packet, board members, but you didn't see the red markings, I don't think. And this may be more illustrative of what we're talking about. So either Brian or Melissa, did a member of the staff review the five requirements for a variance with you?
Melissa.
Okay. Can you please, for the record, for the testimony, can you please cover each of those five requirements? And Chuck, if you want to bring that up, that might help them as well.
Chuck, could you bring up, all I see is the plat. Can you bring up the requirements?
And I was also muted. I will bring that up while you guys start your testimony.
So I think you did testify, but I think what we're looking is for one of you, whoever prefers, to remark or comment on each of the five criteria so that we have it in the record.
Melissa, would you like me to do that?
Sure, please. Thanks, Brian.
Yep. So I actually went for a run because I didn't bargain for this being as long as it is.
Thank you. So, neither did I.
Yeah. Chuck, can you bring up the, I can see it on my phone, but I don't remember all five off the top of my head. Bring that up.
Working on it.
I can read them off if no one has issue with that.
Well, why don't you start us off that way and then Chuck can bring it up when he has time. So David, what's the first issue?
Okay. Provide that all the following findings.
Well, why don't you start from the beginning of the sentence? Sorry to be such a nitpick.
No, it's okay. Section 225-1007.9.A, provided that all the following findings are made where relevant in a given case. One, that there are unique physical circumstances or conditions, including irregularity. Okay.
We got it. We know.
Thank you. Narrowness or shallowness of lot size or shape, or exceptional topography, topographical or other physical conditions peculiar to the particular property, and that the unnecessary hardship is due to such conditions and not the circumstances or conditions generally created by the provisions of this chapter in the neighborhood or district in which the property is located.
And actually, I'm gonna, thank you, David. Can you scroll back up to the beginning of the section, Chuck? Okay, I'm gonna actually add that. The Township Zoning Hearing Board shall hear requests for variances where it is alleged that the provisions of this chapter having to do with the zoning inflict unnecessary hardship upon the applicant. And then in order to allow a variance, we may grant a variance if the following findings are made in regard to that unreasonable hardship. I just want to make sure we're clear about what we're talking about. So now, Brian, I will turn over to you to address the first criteria. Unmute, sorry. Brian, you're muted.
So the unique physical condition would be that the lot is a corner lot, which then puts her into, and the lot is also, and Chuck, I would need your help on this. Is it 90, what is the width, 70 feet?
75 feet.
75 feet. So the lot's 75 feet, the side yard offset to my property is 5 feet. And then because she has a 50 foot front yard and Valley, although being on the side of her property is being applied as a front yard offset. That leaves her with only 20 feet of usable space on her lot.
Okay. And just to clarify, so I understand your point, Brian, I also live on a corner lot. So in a way, because I'm on a corner lot, we have two front yards that we have to meet the setbacks.
Yeah. And Sandy, I believe your garage detached structure is within 50 feet, because I did review.
Okay.
I reviewed.
Tell Chuck.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem, is the ordinance is relatively new. I reviewed all of sort of what people call it, the downtown Hershey, and aside from maybe one or two on Elm, the corner offset is never 50 feet.
Okay.
Just due to the nature of our lot sizes, you know, right. When the Hershey Estates platted it, none of them are that wide, except for Elm.
And I'll let you continue to the next item. I don't think we need to read it to you, Brian, if you can read it on your screen. Or do you want us to read it?
No, I can read it.
Okay.
I mean, this is also the physical circumstance being a corner lot. So that's relative as well, that variance. I mean, Melissa, so 20 feet isn't a standard two-car garage.
Is or is not? I'm sorry,
Is not. So, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say that everyone's entitled to a two-car garage, but it is a hardship, arguably an unnecessary hardship, to not have the ability to build a two-car garage on a lot in Derry Township.
Okay.
The variance, if authorized, no, it doesn't alter the character of the neighborhood, as I mentioned.
I think you missed three.
Oh, that was my hardship. Number two was, the physical circumstances. I mean,
number two is there's no possibility that the property can be developed.
Well, yeah, you can't build a two-car garage with this offset.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then number three, relative to that, you can't build a two-car garage. You could argue if it's a hardship or not.
Brian, if I could just interject, the ordinance does require two off-street parking spaces for each single-family dwelling. So there is some necessity, you might say, to have a two-car garage.
Okay. Well, are you testifying, Chuck?
I'm telling you what the ordinance says.
I see. Okay, well, I think we're actually on number three, says that such unnecessary hardship has not been created by the applicant.
I didn't. I was not prepared to testify on each of these variants. Right. Take it for what it is. I'm not going to revisit that one. No, the variance will not alter the essential character of the neighborhood. My property is next to hers. It has a 24 by 24 foot garage. There's two other ones on our lot or our block. And number five, the variance. Yeah, I mean, if she gets 5 or 4 feet offset, maybe like 4 feet, 1 inch for the thickness of the siding, she should be good.
All right, then let me just throw out as devil's advocate. So could you do it with a variance of, instead of 4 feet, 3 feet?
I'm not sure how you can do a 24 by 24
yeah.
Structure with that 3 feet.
No, she couldn't do it.
I'm just suggesting, Melissa, that...
garage.
Yeah, that people have one car garages or smaller bays or something. I'm not a developer myself. I don't know, but that's what I was asking, Brian.
I think, Sandy, to have a two car garage comfortably, and that's why I have a 24 by 24 with the size of modern vehicles, that is sort of the appropriate. I think, you know, if you buy a charter home nowadays, 21 by 21 is the standard, but they're obviously going to cut every corner and they want to charge you for every foot. So But don't quote me on that. You know, I just testified, but I'm not also a developer, so I don't know what they get away with. But 24 by 24 is sort of an appropriate. And she's also doing two doors, right?
I am.
Melissa, so you have a width between, you know, because of the operating hardware and everything. So there's a width between that sort of drives a little wider. I have a single door. So.
Okay. Thanks you, Brian. And Brian or Melissa, do you want to add any additional testimony? I think we did cover all five. I might have missed one, but I think.
Well, in speaking with Dave Rapon, a local realtor, when I mentioned about building a garage, as far as marketability of a home inside of Derry Township, he said, please don't build a one car. They're very hard to sell.
Okay. Thank you. And any other testimony you guys want to add? If not, does the staff want to make any staff comments without venturing into the area of opinions? Thank you very much.
This is Mike. I just want to say there's some of the standard garages that I've built. The standard garage sizes are typically 18 by 20, 20 by 20, 20 by 22, 22 by 24, and 24 by 24. So any of those dimensions are considered, standard by building standards for new structures. But I have no issue with it whatsoever. I just wanted to make you aware that there are five different standard sizes of two-car garages. Again, 18 by 20, 20 by 20, 20 by 22, 22 by 24, and 24 by 24.
Does anyone else have any other questions they'd like to ask before we turn it over to staff for making any comments?
Sandy, this is Brian. I do want to clarify, I'm not a developer, so I don't challenge my license in court because I didn't know the...
Oh, no, you don't have to be a developer. I'm sorry. I meant right. I'm not a developer. I didn't mean anyone else here was. I'm just saying.
No, I've only built one garage, so it was 24 by 24, so that's what I was... I just wanted to, I don't want to like get called out for my.
Certainly the most common. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
Brian, I have a question for you. This is Dean Morgan. So you are the next door neighbor then? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm the next door neighbor who said I'd help fill out her application and then it's ballooned.
Okay. So I presume you have no objection to this structure being built.
No, I laid it out. So,
okay.
And honestly, I didn't in a million years think this, the offset. I mean, as a citizen, I would like, the ordinance to be more reflective of the neighborhood. So, okay. I have no objection.
That leads to my next question. Would this structure in any way interfere with the conditions of the neighborhood?
No. Well, that's an opinion of mine, so okay. I would say no.
Correct. That's what he's asking for. That's fine.
Yeah.
You get to have opinions.
Yeah. No. As I indicated, and I pled with, this is like $200 for Melissa. I pled with Chuck to exercise a variant. What is the term, Chuck? It's I don't know, some variant.
That's why we're here. So, okay. So it wouldn't change the nature of the neighborhood and you have no objection to it. Is that right?
No, nope.
Okay. All right. I have no other questions.
Any other questions for either of these folks before we turn it over to the staff for their non-opinions? Okay. We'll turn it over to the staff, whoever's handling this one.
Right. This is a corner lot. Thus meaning it has two front yards and two side yards. It is an accessory structure which is being built at 24 by 24 feet. Therefore, the property does not have enough room as is. A variance would need to be granted for this structure to be built.
Okay, did you have any other information you wanted to share with the committee, with the board? I'm sorry, David.
No.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone from the public to comment on this application, on this hearing, offer testimony, I meant. Right. I just want to make sure we give people plenty of time. Hearing none, any other final comments or questions by board members or the applicants? Okay, hearing none. I just need to state that I will be ending this hearing, and we have 45 days to render a decision, and you have 30 days to appeal if you choose to do so.
Okay, thank you, Sandy.
Welcome. Thank you for participating and again for being so patient. And now, do we have any other business coming before the board?
We do hearing, not.
Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
I'll move for adjournment.
Thank you, Dean. Okay. And who seconded? I'm sorry.
Lindsay.
Okay, thank you very much. Any discussion, Steve? You didn't get the joke. Okay.
Yeah, I got the joke. I answered you with silence.
Okay. Hearing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, likewise. And we stand adjourned. And so the public knows, we reconvene in a private Zoom for our deliberations. So I will see my colleagues there.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.